you've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Guidepost. Just Tony on here today, but I have a special guest, and we're going to talk about a difficult topic. It's been a little while. Man, have we been busy since like late spring, but we're starting to pick up the cadence again. So hope we didn't lose too many listeners along the way, but boy, is there a lot going on. One of the biggest issues in the fishery down here for the last five or so years is that you need an abacus, an astrology book, and a slide rule to figure out when you can and cannot fish. And then once you figure out when you kill a chicken and swing it above your head, and you figure out that, you know, you can't fish for stripers at a certain point, big question marks are in your head if you can even fish for other species. And we got a longtime buddy of mine on the podcast who ran into a little bit of trouble due to the insane level of this rule. Popular guy on social media, does a lot of kayak fishing. But today, as I said, my good buddy, long-term buddy, Alan Batista, has joined us. Alan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Tony. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Doing good. I see some artwork behind your head from the girls, I guess. I see on social media they are growing up. It looks like at least one of them loves fishing with their dad, right?
Yeah, they both do. Actually, the young one likes making fishing lures more than she likes actually fishing. So you'd appreciate that she likes to tie flies. And I'm not necessarily the best instructor, but we muddle through it. The older one, she loves to fish with me whenever possible. We just got back from the beach. In fact, the artwork you see behind me, I had a birthday a few days ago. So the nice thing about having girls, thanks, bud. Nice thing about having girls is they treat you really well for your birthday. They make you feel special. So we had a nice time. They decorated. They made artwork. So keen of you to notice the artwork behind me.
Little girls love their daddy, man. You know, God go with you in a couple of years when they turn into teenagers. Savor the flavor right now. It all changes. My son, our conversations kind of go like this. Hey, buddy, bro, shut the door. And I'm like, okay, they're different. There's different phases in fatherhood, Alan. So we got to talking the other day, and Alan shared with me really a shitty experience that he had to go through. So Alan's written three books about kayak fishing, the Chesapeake Bay. What's the social media site, Alan? I don't want to get it wrong.
Yeah, I've got a couple of social media sites. The Instagram is Chesapeake Trilogy. The Facebook page is Light Tackle Kayak Trolling the Chesapeake, which was the name of the first book. I didn't know that I'd have two more after that, but that's how the name came out.
Hindsight's 20/20, man. You know, so Alan's an embedded figure in kind of the whole Chesapeake Bay kayak. He's got a solo skiff. Alan's one of those guys that, like, when he pulls his kayak out, I just look at it and it looks like an aircraft carrier with like a couple of Patriot missiles on it. Like, he's hooked up, you know, like it's amazing. It's amazing all the equipment that they can fit on these things now. But one of the other things that Alan's known for is going up and down the coast and chasing big fish. Alan kind of lives in the northern part of the bay, so probably his favorite time of year to fish is when the big fish come up in the winter, and you know, to get back in all the areas where you really have to know what you're doing, but you got a shot at a couple of giant fish, really giant fish. And that's kind of Alan's passion. And these closures really threw a hitch into your fishing calendar over the years, right? I mean, we've talked about this extensively.
Back in the, you know, back in the day, you know, the Susquehanna Flats was, you know, my favorite spot in the world. I was on the water as much as humanly possible. And it was one of these things. It's a magical place to me. I moved down from Pennsylvania and we didn't have anything like rockfish up there. We had trout that were stocked that were maybe, you know, 9-10 inches long, if you were excited about that. So when I moved down here and saw, you know, stripers, that was kind of an amazing thing. And that was sort of the heyday. That was the, you know, around your, you know, early 2000s.
Those were the 20, days, man.
That's right. 20 some years ago, you could walk across the boats out there. Now, little did I know that was the high point of the fishery. I mean, you can track that spawning loss, and it's done nothing but decline for those past 20 some odd years. So, you know, I almost caught more fish and didn't even know what I was doing, you know, but you know, little by little, that got to be a more challenging fishery, and almost no one goes up there anymore. But you could still catch some if you knew what you're doing. You know, you put the time in, you knew where the weed lines are, where the trenches are, you could come up with something. But that was really an April fishery. So, you know, what, 5-6 years ago, they took away they basically made it no targeting, right? So you can't fish from essentially April 1st through June 1st up there, right?
Alan, if you go back into the Wayback Machine, and people don't know this, you know, when they opened up the flats fishery in the late 90s, there was an extensive amount of science that went into it. That people were up there catching fish, giving them to DNR. DNR was putting them in net pens, seeing if they survived. They were figuring out like how, you know, what we could use to catch them and what the rules are. And when the flat season finally rolled out, you know, in the late 90s, there were a couple of rules that really made sense. And it was a catch and release fishery. And the other rule that made sense is that we knew when water temperature got, you know, to around 70 with no salinity, that release mortality spiked. So there's all these weather buoys all over the bay. And they had a rule that if one of the buoys hit 70 degrees, like twice in a day, that's it. The flats fishery was closed. So, you know, we would all, you never kind of knew when it was closed, but it was like May 15th was the day on the calendar. But then they had that insurance policy of if it was a warmer spring and the water got warmer faster, they would shut the flats down based on temperature. And whether you agree with, you know, catching these fish, the other thing that they found on the flats was that the vast majority of the fish that you caught on the flats, because it was a staging area, were males under 36 inches. That is not to say that you did not catch giant females as well, but I mean, this is how it works. Like, the males sit there and they wait for the big females to come in from the ocean. And then the big females come in and they don't spend a lot of time on the flats. And then the good Lord flips the light switch and everyone goes up the river to spawn. The males go back to the staging area for the next wave and the females get out of Dodge and go back to the ocean. So you have these real narrow windows. Even when there were a lot of big fish, you had these real narrow windows when you really had a good shot at catching a giant.
Right. You said a lot of good things there. And, you know, and you said a lot of good things there, and that's important for historic context. And, you know, it's hard for people that haven't lived the fishery as long as you have and haven't seen it, you know, through the course of time, because it has evolved. And so everybody has a sort of a moving goal line of perspective. And what people see today, and, you know, it was perpetuated by, unfortunately, our state, that catch and release is bad. And And so there's a whole bunch of people that are out there saying, why are you catching and releasing a fish? You know, 100% of those things are going to die, right? And that's just not true. And that's been one of the campaigns I've been trying to, you know, ride your coattails about and leverage. And it was a post I put up the other day that was pretty popular and said, look, guys, not all catch and release is bad. They demonized us. It's time to really educate people about salinity, about, you know, water temperature, about style of fishing. And the Massachusetts, you know, studies are really, you know, highlighting some of those things. So hopefully we can undo some of the harm that's been done to, you know, catch and release anglers, which are ultimately conservationists.
Look, you want to be honest? Let's be honest. The reason why they shut fishing down in April was because the trophy season went away.
Right. We know that. That was punitive damage, and you're right on the money.
Yeah.
But they won't say that.
This was basically the message. They can't kill them, so you can't catch and release.
That's right.
That was the whole message. And when we could catch and release and they could kill them, they were still mad at us because they would say, why are you playing with our fish before we can kill them? That was always a really odd argument. It never really resonated with me with that crowd. And you're just I don't know.
And the other odd argument they always had, and this one blows me away. They said, well, you catch them before they spawn, right? We catch them after they spawn. They've already spawned. And the thing is, we let them go. They survive and they spawn again. Their argument almost ignores the fact that they're going to spawn for the next 15, 20 years if they don't harvest it.
Catch and release mortality is high in the bottom of a cooler. you can't even believe that you're having these discussions. So look, people are wondering, they're listening to this. They're like, oh man, what's the Guides Association position going to be on the Maryland proposal to open it back up? We really have to look at the proposal, and we have to listen to what the meeting's going to be. But the truth is, Alan, like, I can't escape yet. Do I want to fish again in April? Yeah, it'd be nice. However, I just get the feeling like I can't let go of the sense that based on the fishery right now, it's kind of like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. Like, me personally, on a personal level, would I like to be able to go and walk near the water with a rod and not worry about getting a ticket in April because it would ruin my life? Yeah, that would be really cool. But I have to kind of look at everything holistically, and, you know, I cannot get over that you look at this and you're like, you're fiddling while Rome is burning. Like, why didn't you take all of this staff time and apply it to something that could really scientifically help this fishery? Like, they're just, it's like you closed the fishery down, catch and release down, when it didn't need to be closed down for political reasons. You closed it down. And now everyone's mad and tackle shops are collapsing and nobody's fishing anymore. And the effort in Maryland is like falling through the roof. Nobody even talks about striper fishing anymore. Really? That's how bad it is. And now you want to open it back up. I mean, they couldn't get something right. I mean, a broken watch has a better track record.
No, you're absolutely right. The optics of it are pretty terrible. DNR. Right. So they should have never taken it away to begin with. They should have done the right thing out of the gate. Now, I wasn't always as educated and appreciated, you know, people like you and the Guides Association that are helping get the message out. I had no idea that the summer fishing, you know, was as bad for mortality as it was. Now, I've known that for quite some time now. And as a result, I've completely adjusted my habits. Now, I have not gone out and summer fished, and it's unfortunate because in my backyard, there's a whole bunch of good fishing, but I can't ethically do that knowing that the water temperature is literally 85 degrees right now. The water is very fresh. The oxygen is incredibly low. And, you know, the chance of that fish surviving is probably about 30% in those conditions.
Yeah. You don't have to tell us when to fish. Like, the people who really care self-regulate. Like,
right.
Remember when this closure came around like last week, no one even said anything.
No,
nope. No, there wasn't a peep on social media because they make sense when it environmentally makes sense.
The only peep I heard was,
sense. Yeah.
Was suddenly the water temperature doesn't get any better on August 1st. And that's true. So the 2 week closure is kind of a hill of nothing.
Yeah.
It probably should be, I don't know, mid June to mid August. And after mid August, those oxygen levels increase, the nights get a little cooler.
Yeah.
Your survivability increases, but you know, that's also optically difficult because that is an entire summer fishery. And that's the state of Maryland that has the state fish as a striper.
Not for much longer, man, if things keep going this way.
It's going to be the blue catfish.
Okay, so look, here we go. You know, I obviously talked to a lot of people up and down the coast. And, you know, people are like, oh, how's the fishing? And a lot of times I'm like, I don't know. Because I'm not allowed to fish. And I'm in a, you know, you're fixing to tell your story. And your story is my biggest fear in the world. And I don't fish because of it. So, like, imagine being terrified to just take your kid down to the community beach and catch a couple of, like, 10-inch white perch because Mr. Green Jeans is going to come along and say you're striper fishing. And I didn't want to put myself, because of my job, I cannot ever put myself in a position to be standing there and having that discussion, because so much of it is up to that individual's discretion. And I can't be in that position. And unfortunately, this April, you found yourself in that position.
I was in the exact same position.
Tell the listeners the story of what happened to you. This cautionary tale of you shouldn't have rules that you can't enforce.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. There's a lot of facets to this story. The actual act of what happened is not that interesting. But it's how it was handled was way more fascinating. And for all the things you just said, you don't want to be in those situations. You don't want to be faced and confronted with basically somebody's subjectivity and how they're going to judge you. It was an April night. It was a Friday night, and you know, striped bass season had closed, right? In the entire bay, and you laid it out. The entire bay in April, it's closed. All the way up to May 15th or June 1st, depending on, you know, where you're fishing, right? So what the majority of us do that want to keep fishing, we switch to other species, right? And the other large fish that you can catch is a blue catfish. And, you know, as a lot of us know that live in Maryland, the blue catfish is a huge problem. It's an invasive species.
They're invasive. People don't know that. Like here, there, Virginia put them in the water decades ago for angling opportunity. And basically we had 1 year where it just rained for like 6 months straight. The bay did not have a lot of salinity, and these things broke through the salt line in some Virginia rivers. And now they're basically the equivalent of, I don't know, like a rat plague in like 1400s England. Yeah, it's kind of,
it is unbelievable until you see it, the impact that they have and the biomass of which they're able to sustain in a very small area. Unbelievable, right? Sure, they've got a lot of fans that people want to catch them because they're not hard to catch. They get very large and they actually taste pretty good. I think they're actually one of the tastier fish on the bay. Right up there with flatheads. And so we have an interesting fishery. So you've got a lot of things that make what I'll call like a spring push. You know, it starts with like gizzard shad. You'll see gizzard shad run up. You'll see yellow perch run up. You'll see stripers following them up. You'll get the herring that go along with that, the hickory shad, the American shad. You've got snakehead now that come up in obscene numbers. And of course, the smallmouth, you've got a if you know what to do, you've got a pretty world-class smallmouth fishery nearby. And you've got all these fish. I can't hesitate to mention walleye. Even the walleye are stocked. They have a natural, I think, reproduction that occurs there. So you've got, I don't know, a dozen or so different species all living side by side with each other. But you can't catch one of them, right? You're not allowed to catch one of them. And so that's kind of the problem that you run into, because there's some subjectivity there. That particular night, I rolled up to the river, and I was looking for some blue cats. And, you know, I think it shouldn't go without saying that there's a lot of people that try to get away with striped bass fishing while trying to catch a catfish. And they'll put something like, you know, a big hunk of gizzard shad on there, or they'll put a piece of perch. They'll put some sort of live bait on there. And, you know, so there's some subjectivity there that occurs. You know, I'm very aware of that, and I don't want to catch any bycatch. So I bought some of this, you know, this stuff right here.
Catfish Pro catfish bait.
Right. And you know, what flavor is that? That is garlic, right?
Garlic. Yeah.
So they sell that in all kinds of different flavors, bloodworm, bonker, you name it. And I said, man, I'm going to use the thing that I think the catfish is going to like that stripers aren't. So that was the bait that I had on there. And along with this rig, this is the rig I cut off of my rod. You can see it's a big old circle hook with a float and a weight, right? Pretty standard drift bait setup, right? So I'm walking along the river, and you can hear it. It's one of those sort of majestic nights. The water is incredibly low. For as much rain as we've had now, we didn't get much rain at all spring long. So you get these fish that push up the river, and they are, you know, incredibly consolidated, and you can hear them. So I've seen you post videos of blue catfish sort of voraciously attacking the surface, and in intense numbers. It was that kind of thing. Everywhere you could hear was just splashing, and it's strictly a night thing. I've heard it several times. I've witnessed this several times, but it was one of those cool nights, right? So basically make a few casts, catch some catfish. They're all generally, you know, on the smaller side, right? So I do that for a little while. I go out, changing spots, just walking along the trail, and, you know, a dark figure pops out from the woods. All right. It's DNR. You know, kind of scares the pants off you a little bit, because you're all alone. You don't think anybody's like, you know, going to pop out at you. So sure enough, talked to the officer, and he said, "What are you fishing for?" I said, "You know, catching some blue cats." And he looked at my rod, and I had, you know, the circle hook on the float. And he said, "Okay, well, what are you using for bait?" And I'm carrying my pail. I've got a Yeti bucket where I carry my gear in, you know, the bait, the boga grips, you know, whatever. And so he looks at the bait. "So catfish bait." "So, okay, yeah, you're good, right?" So I go along. I keep fishing down, you know, down the river, up and down the river. And it was like 3 hours later, and something else hits my line, right? And it's big, right? Catch a striper. And I was like, ah, all right. So I reel it in, I let it go, and I walk away, right?
That's the rule.
As I know it, right?
So right, there's right. If you that was discussed in multiple meetings. Like if I'm fishing for white perch and I catch a striper, well, I'm not supposed to be targeting stripers during the closure, so I move. What else can you do?
Yeah, I want to return to that comment about catching white perch and catching a striper, because I know somebody that also got a ticket for doing that. So as I've come across this, you know, people have been, you know, sharing their stories with me, and it's mind-boggling, right? You know, I didn't think I'd ever be in this situation, but here I am, and sharing my story, and people share the same thing. So it's really eye-opening. So yeah, I mean, I walked away right away. And again, that's not written down anywhere, by the way. They will tell you, you either have to change your, you know, change your lure, change your bait, change your location. But all I had was this, you know, catfish bait. And so my only choice was I have to walk away, which I did immediately. And right away, there were two guys that popped out of the woods again, two different guys. And they said, "Hey, you caught a striper." I said, "Yes, sir, I did. That's exactly why I left." Right. So he wants to see my license and all that. And, you know, to me, this was just, you know, another encounter. I was just going to, you know, move on down the line and keep going. That isn't what happened. So, he said, "Okay, we're going to have to go over the truck." So I have to go to the truck. I mean, what's going on here? And, now I'm starting to think something is a little bit amiss, right? And, he says, "Well, we need to see your camera and we need to see your phone." I said, if not, we're going to confiscate it. So I don't, at this time, so Tony, I've never even gotten a traffic ticket. You know, I am as straight edge and clean as the nigger in the snow, right? And I'm like, well, you know, what is happening here? So they're, I don't think it's, you know, I don't even think it's legal, to be honest with you. They're asking me these things. And so now I'm getting nervous. I feel like I'm, you know, they're kind of fishing for something. I don't know what the deal is, but I'm feeling uncomfortable, right? So they talk to me, they ask me what I'm doing. He's like asking very leading questions, and I don't even know how to answer. I feel like anything I'm saying can and will be used against me in a court of law, right? That kind of scenario.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's like squeezing my bait. He's like checking if it's wet. I'm like, what is going on here? You know? So we go back to the truck and yeah, he pulls out, you know, I've got my whole Yeti bucket. And he said, are there any fishing lures in there? I don't even know why that's germane, but I said, no, I don't have anything in there. I said, it's a bucket. There might be something in the bottom that I don't know what's in there. I have no idea. So they literally, they pull everything out, right? They lay it along the side of the road here, you know, and the only thing there is basically my Boga grips, you know, these set of hooks right here, my fishing floats, you know, all the random, you know, essentials, pair of pliers, snips, like that kind of stuff. Right. So, you know, I said, there's no way, like, you think I tried to catch a striper on this dough bait, right? There's no way you think I tried to do that. Like, why are we having this conversation? Why am I still here? Right. So they go through my phone, right? Again, I don't even know that that's legal, but they did. And, you know what's in your phone.
This has gone from, "Hey, honey, I'm going to go fishing tonight. I'll be home when the sun comes up. Thank you. You know, I'll see y'all in the morning. I'm going to go out and get a little closer with God on the shoreline," to like, "These people are going to confiscate my phone."
Right. Right.
What in the world is happening? Like, what? Right. Like, hold on a minute. I'm fishing with Mr. Catfish Garlic Dough Balls. Like, what? Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, they go through my phone and, you know, they go through lots of my stuff. They go through my camera, they go through my phone. And,
you're talking about your GoPro, because you do a lot of video. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I'm always recording. So, yeah. You know, it's part of creating the content. So, yeah. You know, there's always stuff going on. And, but yeah, they're going through my phone and, you know, you got pictures of your kids in there, pictures of your wife, and your family, all stuff. It's like, it's very intrusive. It's very invasive. And
oh yeah.
Again, for a guy like me that,
oh, you know, Jesus, man, if they went through my memes, I would have probably gotten a ticket for something else. So, you know, I have been like, don't open that folder. So yeah.
So, you know, the crazy thing is the first couple pictures, you know, on the phone, the only thing they saw were pictures of catfish from that night. And I'm like, guys, look, this is what's going on. And, so I don't understand. I don't understand this. And, you know, like I said, I'm getting nervous. Like, I don't know what their angle is. And they said something that was, you know, has kind of stuck with me. They said, well, we didn't know who you were. And I didn't say anything about who I am. I didn't say, you know, I'm Mr. You know, fisherman or anything like that. I didn't make any kind of thing like that. So it kind of stuck with me that are they targeting me? Right. And the first thing I thought was
the other issue, Alan, that maybe some people don't know that don't follow you is you're pretty vocal.
You know, that's what I was going to say.
There's a lot of people that have a presence on social media, and you know, the bane of my existence, and I got to tell you, it's one of my pet peeves. When people, you know, work at developing their own audience and are clearly benefiting off the resource, but they never take a position on anything. They never give back. They never talk about conservation because conservation is messy. And to your credit, you address these issues on your platform, and you're vocal about conservation issues like the best practices for catch and release and, you know, stuff. You spend a good chunk of your time educating people, and you've lost followers because of it, and you've pissed some people off. And I just, there's a difference between the way that you manage your audience and other people manage their audience. And you're a little bit braver and stick your neck out. So it would kind of be not too far-fetched after you've been sitting there for half an hour to be like, holy mackerel, is this because I was vocal about some of Maryland's policies? That is natural. That is a natural thing to think in your position.
Exactly. Yeah. You and I have had this conversation probably as long as 10 years ago, if not more, about, you know, the value of sticking your neck out there and people that don't, right? That they don't take a position. And to me, that's empty. That's hollow. What are you doing? You're benefiting from the resource, but you're not putting yourself out there in an authentic way, right? So yeah, I've done that, and I've gained some non-advocates, I'll put it that way. Gained some hate, right? I've lost followers, and that's okay. I can live with that because you consolidate the audience that is valuable and important to you. And over time, people change their attitudes. It's, you know, it's been said the hardest thing to do is change a man's mind. And that's what we've been trying to do for, you know, as long as we've been fishing, trying to change people's minds. And that peanut is rolling up the hill, but it's getting there. It's getting there. So, so I'm in this position now. I'm talking to this officer and he says something like that. So in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, I've been pretty critical of your bosses here for a long time. And am I on the hit list? Right. That was kind of my thought, because this whole thing was so preposterous to me that it was hard to come up with another explanation. Right. So, again, I'm not accusing them of that. I don't know the truth. I don't know, but you know, that this is what's going through my
mind. Reasonable question.
Right. That's how I'm feeling. So they go through this whole thing and literally, I mean, they're doing this for an hour. I mean, I spent an hour on the side of the road talking to these guys, and it was cordial. It wasn't like, you know, aggressive or anything like that, but yeah, certainly uncomfortable. So there was, man. So let's talk about resources. There were four officers that talked to me that night, right? For catching the wrong fish and letting it go. Let me just summarize. After several hours, I caught a single rock, let it go, and left immediately after catching multiple catfish, right? Which they saw on my phone. So they still wrote me a ticket. After all this, they write me a ticket. I'm still like, guys, what do you want me to do? Like, what is the scenario? And their response, they don't give you a, here's what you should do. Now, me as an engineer, I want things black and white. Here are the rules, here are not the rules. I don't want this subjective, you know, nonsense. You know, because like we started this conversation, I don't want to walk up to the side of the river, which is, you know, a world-class fishery for all kinds of different species, and accidentally get the wrong thing, right? That is, you know, that's not a position that you want to be in. So, they wrote me a ticket, and they said, well, if you can't keep them on your off your line, then you shouldn't be fishing. I said, what? It wasn't a problem keeping them. It's, you know, that's not the problem. You know, the place, the whole bay isn't closed to fishing. It's close to striper fish, right? And I understand, you know, the problem of, you know, enforcing subjective regulations. This isn't one of those.
Look, dude, it's not just fishing for catfish. If you were 100 miles south, it could have been speckled trout. It could have been redfish. It could have been anything. It could have been bluefish. Right. It could have been Spanish mackerel. You know, it's not, this isn't just one area, you know, of a river where there's multiple species. Like, it's kind of an everyday thing around here. You know, you could drift when we used to have fish, not now, but when we used to have fish where I live, you could drift a shoreline and conceivably redfish, speckled trout, flounder, striper, a little bit deeper water, bluefish and Spanish mackerel. Like, isn't that the allure of fishing brackish and salt water? Like,
100%.
But you don't know what you're going to catch.
So you never know.
It's illegal to, but please, keep going. So now you got a ticket. Now you got four guys who have devoted countless hours looking at you through a night vision scope in the woods when you're trying to catch an invasive species. Now they've laid out all your stuff. They've looked at your phone. They've looked at your GoPro. And now you're sitting there next to your truck with a ticket going, what the hell, what just happened?
Right. Yeah. So it's a $250 ticket, just to set the stage of what it is. So, not crazy expensive, but not cheap either. And I think most people would say, well, I'm just going to pay this and move on. And that's what a lot of people end up doing. And I said, if I pay this, does this assume I'm guilty of this? Right. Because I just want to move on and whatever. And they said, well, yeah, it's assumed that you're guilty. And they made it sound like, it's not a big deal. They're like, yeah, this isn't a criminal thing or whatever else. Right. Like, okay, well, I it's a principle thing for me and I don't think this is right. So I said, I'm going to have to fight this in court. So, okay. So, what happens between that day and the court date was kind of terrible. There, like you mentioned, there's some people out there that don't care for me based on some of my positions and stances and being vocal on things. And so what happens is, this charge shows up on your record. And I guess there must be people like checking my record all the time. Right. And it's clean up until this moment. So there was like a 2-week period, I think, that this was on my record. And there was a troll page that they decided that they were going to go blast that out to the world. Right. And they said that, this guy is a poacher. And by the way, here's his address and go ahead and send him all this like profane items and all this stuff. Right. So, they dox me and they put all the stuff out there. I'm like, well, guys, you have no idea what happened, but this defamation stuff is it's nonsense. You shouldn't be doing this. You should know what the whole situation is because, you could end up in the same situation. You shouldn't be mad at me. You should be mad at the regulations for how they stand. Right. So I have to deal with that. Right. So, and that's the problem for these kind of things. Like you can be accused of anything, right? And you have to go fight it. Now you fight that in court of public opinion. And it doesn't really matter, whether you're found guilty or not. You still have to kind of fight the burden of your reputation. And so that's a really problematic aspect of this in and of itself, right? So anyway, I'll move forward, to the court date. I got a lawyer, which I highly recommend because I'm so naive. I didn't know exactly how this was going to go down. Right. I don't watch a lot of TV, but the lawyer said, hey, it's just going to be like it is on TV. Like, I don't know what that looks like. Right? So, I prepared that night. I went home after I got the ticket and I put together all my information of what's going on. I've got my Amazon purchases, just before the closure to stock up on catfish floats, on catfish bait, on catfish circle hooks, right? So I put together this whole like booklet of stuff to show. And I thought that I'd just be like, hey, judge, here's all the stuff.
I'll remind everyone, Alan mentioned in passing, he's an engineer. So like, if you could see when he was getting ready for the podcast, he has all this stuff laid out on a table as like evidence for the podcast so he can hold up the catfish bait and get me to read it and stuff. It's pretty, he's a pretty thorough kind of guy. Like if you follow his fishing page, it's a little extreme. It's an engineer's mind. That's all. That's it, if you spent 15 minutes going through Alan's posts and stuff, if you had the top three guesses of what he does professionally, I promise one of those guesses would be engineer. That's all I'm going to say. So like the very thorough, meticulous individual, and like probably not the average person that that courtroom sees for a fishing violation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a blessing. It's a curse, Tony. you know, sometimes I ask some questions and look for some things and people are like, why are you looking for that level of detail? But you know what I do for a living. And when we look for things that go wrong, you know, we really dig into the details. And so, yeah, that's my approach on fishing in general. It's how I've written those books. And it's how I kind of approach this scenario too. And it was to my advantage in this case. And I'll share some of the stories with it. But yeah, I thought this is how it was going to go. I was going to present my book of information to the judge and he's going to say, well, this is crazy. Like you're good. But that's not how it actually goes. And this is kind of a key point here. So I walk into the courtroom with my lawyer and the charging officer was there. And there's this like sort of little powwow that's going on. And I'm not sure what this is all about, but you know, I'm sitting next to him and I'm, you know, hearing what's going on, mostly being quiet, but you know, observing what's happening. And, you know, the lawyer says, well, why the charge here? Like he doesn't have anything that you would target striped bass with. And the officer said, well, he's not being charged with targeting. He's being charged with catching. And I didn't quite understand that subtlety there. And, you know, I'm looking at my ticket here. I said, well, it says I'm being charged with targeting. Like, what is this charge of catching? I've never heard of such a thing, charged with catching. And you know, he kind of pulls up the rule book, right? So you're not allowed to target striped bass. And then you dig a little further and you look at what the definition of targeting is. And here was the shocker. Right. So I sent this to you. Here, let me read it. I'll read you exactly the definition of it. It is, and this is from, what is it? Cornell Law School. And so it defines all of these definitions and regulations. So it says under seasonal restrictions for recreational and charter boat fishery, the term target defined, it means to catch or attempt to catch. I read that verbatim. To catch or attempt to catch, right? Now, how ridiculous does that sound? Because when you read it that way, that means that any 7-year-old catching white perch off their dock that inadvertently catches a striper is in technical violation and someone can be, you know, they can be written a ticket for it. So the other part is you know, just as bad where it says to attempt. Now, how do you know what someone is attempting to catch? So by the way, you know, the judge nor the officers, they're not anglers. They have no idea, most of them, you know, how to actually catch anything. So you get professional anglers out there that know all kinds of stuff that are maybe even doing something different than everybody else. And they say, well, you're attempting to, and I'm going to write you a ticket and you're going to have to fight that in court, right? Again, a situation you don't want to be in for all the things I just talked about. You have to fight that in the court of public opinion, you know, your reputation, there's defamation, there's all kinds of things that go along with that. But you have to spend a day of your, you know, off of work, you got to get a lawyer and you got to fight yourself. Like, your average angler citizen should not have to be subjected to those kind of things, right? So I thought, right, that little powwow that was happening at the beginning of the courtroom, they were going to say, well, you know, we made a mistake and we don't really have any evidence and, you know, just go on your way. I kind of thought that was how it was going to work out because, you know, I'm still like, what is this about? Until they show that definition. And so, you know, we went up in front of the judge and, you know, he laid out his case. So the officer goes first and he gives his account of the story, which I would say was pretty accurate. I mean, I didn't disagree with anything. He left out the gory details. Like he left out the fact that, you know, he went through my phone for an hour, that he laid all my stuff out the side of the road. He downplayed those sort of aspects of it. Right. So, the first question my lawyer asked him is, are there blue catfish in the waters that I was fishing? And I swear to you, this is what he said. He said, how am I supposed to know what is in the water? Right. And I don't know if I rolled my eyes or whatever it is, but I'm like, this is the most ridiculous situation I've ever heard. Now, earlier in the season, Tony, I sent you some pictures of a trot line out there, a commercial trot line for blue catfish, right? And
so, Alan, I'm going to just talk about this for 30 seconds. In the same area where you were fishing for blue catfish, where you got this ticket, all you went through all of this, there are hoop nets, like fike nets, trot lines, jug lines, all with J hooks and bait. This is a spawning river. J hooks and bait targeting blue catfish that stripers will inhale, baited a lot with gizzard shad, not catfish dough balls like you were using. So while we're not allowed to be in near the water, catch anything, do anything, there's a freaking trot line 50 yards long with a hook every 2 feet with gizzard shad on it for catfish that these striped bass are inhaling.
It's worse than that. It's hundreds of yards long, right? It's okay. Hundreds of yards long and unattended, right? So yeah, it's one thing to, you know, hook something accidentally and let it go. It's another thing to be unattended and you've got things that are on there, who knows, as bycatch for how long, right? So yeah, literally within sight of where I'm trying to catch these cats, there is a commercial operation. There are guide services that come up here, all of which have switched over to blue cats from striper, right? It's a pretty prevalent thing to do in that area. And he is not even acknowledging the fact that this is occurring, right? And so, you know, the crazy thing is, he acknowledges that he saw pictures of catfish in my phone. Like, that's what he went through. He's like, yeah, he was catching those. That was happening. You know, he didn't contest that. He didn't contest any attempt to try to catch a striper. He didn't even go there. He just said, well, he caught one. And he was trying to fight it on the grounds of that definition that I gave you there, which, you know, I think we can all agree is inaccurately worded or misappropriately worded. I don't know how that got in there, but that should never be. The act of targeting, as everyone knows, comes along with intent, right? So, you know, that was kind of the scenario. And, you know, we went back and forth for a little bit. And then then the judge sort of said, hey, okay, so what happened? And I pretty much told the same story that he did. And I said, you know, after 3 hours, you know, the wrong fish, you know, hit the line and, you know, I walked out immediately and, you know, they interrogated me for an hour. I said, I've never been in a situation like this in my entire life. And, you know, here I was. I said, it was a very jarring, you know, experience. And, you know, the thing that really, I think, made a difference here, and I've got it. Let me just read it to you. Again, I came prepared. And it's also an awareness of that, you know, the judge doesn't understand fishing. He's not an angler, probably doesn't understand what the laws and regulations are other than what's actually given to him. So I took a snippet from Maryland DNR's Facebook page, and it says, I'll read it here. Although the striped bass season is currently closed, incidental catch and release while targeting other species does occur, right? So I had that information there. And he was like, okay, yeah, you're not guilty. And, you know, that's how it went. I mean, the act of what actually happened was not that interesting, but the process of which happened thereafter was mind blowing to me, right? That, and again, this wasn't a story that I necessarily wanted to share. Tony, you kind of twisted my arm into it.
Tell them what they said to you when you were walking out. I think, look, before Alan says this, I want to be real clear. We have a ton of respect for natural resources police. Like, it's a very dangerous job, incredibly dangerous. I mean, half the year they're not worried about fishermen, they're worried about hunters. So think about that. Like, your job, every person you check has a firearm. There's just an inherent danger in what they do. And, you know, it's like, you have to respect that. And we're not a single word has been said negatively about the officers. Nothing. I think the crux of this is that it's a terrible effing idea, this no targeting stuff, and the wording is even worse. I mean, I'll just say it so you don't have to. Like, Alan told this to me the other day, but when he was walking out of the court, kind of saw the officers, and they were like, yeah, you know, whatever, we get paid double time to be here. And you're just like, what? Like, I had to pay for an attorney? I should be at work right now? You never should have given me the ticket. This rule shouldn't have been written this way. I didn't do anything wrong. Did you really just tell me that you get double time for being in? I mean, that's, I don't know. It's stuff is so stacked against somebody who's just trying to do the right thing. That's crazy. For right. a $250 ticket, how much of an expense was this to the state of Maryland? Mm-hmm. It's kind of my.
Yeah, I appreciate that analysis, Tony. I mean, there is an incentive structure, and I don't know if they have quotas for getting a certain amount of people, but certainly they're incentivized by, you know, financially for, you know, going to court and their day off and things like that. And that was, you know, that was eye opening to me. And yeah, thanks for the description of the officers. And that was one of the reasons why I'm, you know, hesitant to share the story, because these guys aren't our enemies. They're not my enemy. And I don't want there to be, you know, a bunch of hate against, you know, the officers. They're trying to enforce something that's given to them, and they live in an ecosystem, and maybe they get a little bit tied up in that. Maybe they get a little bit, you know, overzealous about, you know, that environment they live in, and the enforcement of it. And, you know, maybe to them, you know, it's just another ticket. It's not a big deal. But to an individual, you know, that can have some lasting effects. And let me jump back to something I said earlier. We talked about catch and perch and, you know, going for stripers. I mean, they exist in the same spot. And I'll tell you a story of someone that I know. And this person lives, well, let me start again. They're a bunch. You need the Rosetta Stone to figure out exactly where and how to fish in Maryland, right? And I don't think a lot of people outside of Maryland recognize that. But there's a rolling set of closures and areas that are closed and open, and some are open to harvest and some are open to catch and release. And depending on the date, like, it changes. It changes, like, pretty wildly. And you can look at the striped bass maps, but you really need to be up on your stuff, right? So assuming you know all that, there are areas, especially where you're sort of right on the line. And, you know, this person happens to live on a river, and she launches from, you know, that river.
And also, while all this is going on, like, what y'all don't realize is there's three things that are a thing with all fishermen here. So, you know, we've been stuck inside all winter. You're freezing your butt off. Sometimes the bay freezes, sometimes the tributary, sometimes there are no options. And we're just in, like, February is like the month of woe and sadness a lot of times, because it can just be so cold that you can't do much. So then the whole world breaks open. And then you have shad pouring in. You have American and hickory shad, which are so much fun to catch, like little baby tarpon, you know? Then you got yellow perch. Yellow perch here are anadromous. They go up the rivers just like a salmon or a striper. Then you have, right after the yellow perch, here come the white perch. So there's just, like, I mean, you're like a kid in a candy store. And guess what's swimming around all of them the whole time? Stripers. I mean, it is very common to be shad fishing, whether you're on the Potomac or whether you're on Deer Creek up at the top of the river, whether you're in the upper reaches of the chop tank, and you hook a little hickory shad and a 40-pound striper comes up and eats it. They all swim together. Yeah, it's very exciting when you're shad fishing. Yeah, I mean, it's like, oh my God, you know, in this creek or whatever. But it is very common. And there are legitimate other things that are swimming around that we targeted well before there were no targeting closures. Well before. It's kind of like it's what we do around here to knock the shack nasties off. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Somebody's fishing for white perch.
They're fishing for white perch, and they live on a river that is closed, right? Now, this was many years ago, and she was en route to the flats, right, which was open at that time, but the Bohemia River is closed, right, or the Elk River is closed, and that is the actual spawning river, right? So she was catching white perch. And she was also going to go fish for striper later, right? So in the process, I think, of jigging up some white perch, she catches a striper. And the DNR comes over, says, hey, you caught one. Let me check your boat. And so what they find is a bunch of striper lures, you know, which she was going to go use later. Wasn't actively using them, but they were on the boat, right? So they write her a ticket. Now, she took the approach that a lot of people did and say, okay, well, I'm not going to go to court. I'm not going to fight all this. I'm just going to pay the ticket and move on. Right. And she was completely doing everything legal. She didn't, you know, she could have just, it's a matter of where the line of demarcation is. This is the closed area. This is the open area. And she has to boat through the closed area to get to the open area, but she can fish for other stuff, you know, in the closed areas. Right. So they wrote her a ticket. Right. And she paid it, which assumes guilt, and it ended up on her record. And, I don't think she thought too much of it other than this is kind of nonsense. But then she says she's going to volunteer for some stuff, and they're checking her record. And they ask her, hey, what is this? Why are you molesting wildlife? Why are you harassing and molesting wildlife? She's like, oh my gosh, like, this is the thing that is now stuck with me for. And so, I mean, there's just another example of sort of the implications to the average person that carries it with them, because a very subjective enforcement thing. And so, you know, I can go on. I've got lots of stories like these things that I've heard, you know, after sharing my story, people have told me. But,
well, correct me if I'm wrong here. And if I'm wrong, it's fine. But I think I know this individual.
You do.
And they were banned for fishing for 6 months, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It wasn't just a $250 ticket, because they contacted me and talked to me about it from a regulatory perspective. And if I'm also not mistaken, this individual now spends a good chunk of their time not in Maryland.
Correct.
At like goes somewhere else and fishes their tail off all the time and is spending money fishing somewhere else, which I think a lot of people are doing now.
Oh, 100%. I spend a lot of money fishing out of state. And
Alan, how much is closed? Like, if we think about how many, I'm talking about how many stores have closed. Or just like tackle shops, guides gone. There's not a lot left, dude. Like, I'm not going to go down a list of names. I don't want to. I know some pretty prolific guides who let their licenses just lapse. They're done. They're done with. They're not doing this anymore. And then the other guides are basically going to other states, whether it's New Jersey or Virginia or whatever, And that's the only way that they can kind of keep the lights on. You can't be a guide. It's really difficult. I could probably count on one hand the number of guides left that do it full time and rely on it.
Yeah, it's very hard. It's very hard for, you know, all the reasons you mentioned. There's a seasonality where the fish actually are, and you know, it's not necessarily where the guides live. You know, those fish sort of consolidate, and then you can't catch them because they're closed. And it's made it hard for the average fisherman to catch fish, and so they go to other spots. I mean, New Jersey has been an eye opener for a lot of us. We've had to go somewhere else. So what's a 2-hour drive to New Jersey? It takes me 2 hours to get to Point Lookout. It's just the same. We would drive to Point Lookout like it was no big deal. Why not go to Jersey where they've got tons of fish up there in certain seasons? I'm not going to say that they're like the most giant fish, but they're a high quality fish, right? I'm not catching 50 inches up there, but you're catching a lot of like 28 to 36s. And, you know, I spent a day up there and I think I drifted for 7 miles with the tide and 7 miles back. And I caught fish that entire time. And it was pretty crazy. But
that was a couple of years ago though.
Yeah, it was a few years ago. Yeah, right. It was
not
a few
like years that ago. So much this year.
No. But it was eye opening for guys in the Chesapeake that are used to what we see. And again, it's a series of perspectives where the goal line is moving. You go out and you catch a fish or two and you think that, you know, you did well that day. That's not how it used to be. That's not how it should be. And so you go to a fishery that's, you know, in a little bit better condition. Again, yeah, that was a couple of years ago. It wasn't that way the last couple of years. But, you know, that's the situation.
So the judge kind of looks at you and is like, this is ridiculous. Not guilty.
Yeah. Yeah, it was sort of a stoic, I gave my account and he said, not guilty. And then it was kind of funny, right? So I'll tell you, there was like the bailiff that was like kind of next to me. And he sort of gave me the thumbs up, you know, and he kind of gave me a wink. And then he wanted to talk about fishing, which was kind of funny. And there was not a lot of guys in the courtroom at that time, but there was a few. And they all kind of gave me the thumbs up.
You're like a folk hero now. You know what I mean? I fought the law and the law, you know, I won. So I think, you know, hey, look, man, none of us are angels, right? You know, I don't know. Like, does anyone want to be in this situation? Where the law is so ambiguous that you can just get a ticket for doing the right thing. And then you have to take time out of your life, hire an attorney, get this off your record. For what? To catch a stupid blue catfish?
Right.
And are you kidding me?
Even under the worst scenarios, like what, you know, say somebody was trying to do that, right? I wasn't dragging a fish out of the woods, right. You know, like even if it was intentional, like, man, the amount of resources and time spent on that thing. I mean, you and I know there are locations where they should really go. You've called, I've called, I know a lot of people have called, they've got people netting, you know, oh. Stripers, right?
Oh, and nobody wants to take and meanwhile, that. You're getting, you got the SWAT team coming down on you and there's a couple hundred yard trot line at your feet.
Right.
And you're just like, boy, you ever hear of a 2-tier system? This is ridiculous. Cause I guarantee you there's stripers on that. I guarantee you.
100%. So the other thing they told me, which I thought was interesting, they said, yeah, we were watching you on the drone. Like, okay. Like that's good. Then
so now they're deploying like artificial intelligence drones.
Right. Like, wow, this is
some middle-aged guy with two little girls who paint his toenails trying to catch a blue catfish. Like, what? What? And again, man, I'm not picking on NRP officers. Like, this is why this is so stupid. This is that there are, in this world, there are stupid laws on the books. this is at the tippity top. This is it. This is at the top. But we do not want this on the coast. You do not want, can you imagine, Alan, when you have bluefish, legitimately bluefish, false albacore, Atlantic bonito, summer flounder, black sea bass, because like you may catch a little striper when you're drifting for summer flounder. Oh, a bunch of people did. Imagine if you have, so Alan had a dough ball, a circle hook, a giant float that, I mean, you all should have seen the picture. You're talking like a 12-inch float and a giant sinker, inline sinker on the rig, okay? Imagine if you just had a strip of squid, a mud minnow, normal bottom bouncing rig for fluke, and you catch a striper, and next thing you know, you got to take a day off of work, hire an attorney. I mean,
right. That's the situation that puts people in.
It doesn't work. It does not work. And people have no idea. And here's the craziest thing. This is the craziest thing. They know it doesn't work. They know it. They're doing this for some crazy shell game so people can keep killing fish as the stock goes flaming, spiraling into the ground, so they can take away from other people on paper because it doesn't do anything. Put all of us in this situation, not to conserve the fish, but to save them so somebody else can kill them on paper. To save them on paper so somebody else can kill them in real life. And that's what we have to live with if we want to go fishing here. Oh, look, because of everything Alan just said, this reaffirmed my belief that I cannot go catch a perch, a speckled trout, a redfish, a bluefish, a Spanish mackerel, nothing during these closures. I can't do anything because I am going to be sitting there on the bow of my boat going, yeah, yes, officer, this is, I'm fishing for redfish. See that. I am fishing for redfish. Well, you caught a striper. I didn't want to.
Well, see what you just said there is, you know, see this, see that. They don't know what they're looking at. They just don't. They don't know what is a redfish lure, a striper lure, a speckled trout lure. You know, all they know is, did it happen? Did it not happen? And then
that's crazy.
You got to leave it up to somebody else to make the judgment on that, who also doesn't know what they're looking at either.
And that's why we started this podcast is like, do you really want to put yourself in that subjective nature?
So I didn't believe it was as, you know, I believed it was subjective, but I believe that there was more protections than that. Right. So, I learned a few lessons along the way. I'll put it that way.
I've known Alan. The first time I met Alan, there were some old friend of mine that I haven't talked to in forever that used to run this incredible kayak tournament. And they had a Boy Scout camp here on the island, and there were they rented the whole Boy Scout camp out, and they had food and people could stay at they could pull their campers in. People drove from everywhere. They were just trucks as far as the eye could see with trailers and kayaks and like the camaraderie. And it was just, you know, it was just this crazy thing, man. That had to be like 2009, 2010.
Yeah. That's about right. Maybe a little earlier, but yeah, that's about right.
Maybe a little earlier. And I'll tell you what, I'll tell all y'all what, if there was one person that somebody said was going to get a ticket, I would not have Alan on my bingo card, because just the way he functions day to day in life. And I'm telling you, we all know people that, like, because of what I do, there are people I don't fish with. I just don't, whether there's a closure or not, because I don't know what's going to happen. Alan is not one of those people. Like, And I'm telling you, if somebody like this can get a ticket and have to go to court and like kind of fight it to the end and hope be up there and just hope and pray that it clicked in the judge's head, man, you don't want this. You don't. And as Alan said, you got trot lines in the water. You got guys dragging 40-pound stripers through the woods. You got all this other stuff going on. And you just got a guy who wants to catch a fish and is obeying the rules, who could be out there catching stripers for sure if he wanted, but is catching a nasty ass, slimy, kind of gross ass fish that,
which may have been the most embarrassing thing of all of it.
Yeah, I mean, not exactly like.
So I had guys right here.
Fish I want to catch, right? Like, they just kind of roll. And here's the funniest thing, and Alan knows this as he's talking through this. These things are so aggressive. I have witnessed an 18-pound blue catfish obliterate a giant spook on top water and caught. They catch them on jigs. You catch them on swim baits. These are not little things that sit on the bottom and just live a, you know, I'm a grazer kind of lifestyle. These are aggressive, big fish. So like Alan did not have to be using catfish. To me, he could conceivably be like, I'm using a swim bait because blue catfish obliterate it. And so to flatheads.
All right, so that's a good point. That's a really good point. And yeah, probably something I want to talk about here while we're discussing this. I've caught a lot of blue cats on plugs and on jigs. They are aggressive. They're not a bottom feeder. I mean, they're a bottom feeder, but they're an aggressive feeder on top of it. And you know, there are styles of fishing that we may not employ because of these kind of regulations. But you know, in areas like the Potomac, it is common practice to go jigging for catfish on, you know, something that, you know, an average person would recognize as a striper, you know, plastic, like a 6-inch BKD, you know, kind of thing on a jig head or on a plug. That is regular fare down there. They jig for them all spring long. And we could do the same thing. You know, we could, you know, functionally be able to catch them on that. But if I were to be addressed by DNR, they would probably write me a ticket, right? If they wrote me a ticket for a doe bait, they would write me a ticket for a jig too, right? And so, you know, there's things that you're just, you know, are closed off to you as an angler. I mean, I would love, you know, to catch a big blue cat, you know, without question on a jig. I mean, that's kind of fun, right? You bounce something along the current and all of a sudden you get one to take. That's not too bad. And yeah, they're not the best fighters, but they're big and they're bulky and, you know, they taste pretty good. But yeah, you could catch them all kinds of ways, but then you got to defend yourself.
Look at the complexity.
Right. Like, exactly.
And this is for a stupid blue catfish. So think about the ocean. Bluefish. Weak fish. Bonito, false albacore, you know, what's going to happen? The party boat going to be out there off New Jersey fishing for black sea bass or summer flounder? If you hook a little striper, you got to move. Is that something you want to do every time? I guess the way that this law is written, you are at great risk. And everyone needs to kind of, you know, some people, maybe this doesn't matter to. Some people just be like, I'll just write the ticket, whatever. But there are others of us who are intertwined in this world and can't afford the risk. A lot of people these days. So what kind of position are you putting people in with a terribly written law that is completely and utterly unenforceable? And that's kind of been our position on this from the get-go. And like, I never in a million years would I have expected it to be you that got the ticket to tell the story. Look, it's over now. I think it's okay that we laugh about this a little bit, because you are kind of Mr. Boy Scout. It is kind of, now that this is in your past, Alan's laughing right now. Now that it wasn't funny when it was happening, but now that it's kind of, I commend you for telling the story on the podcast, because people need to understand it's just, it ain't cut and dry.
No, it wasn't funny at the time. It's more funny now.
It's ridiculous now.
Is how ridiculous it is. And, you know, and now there's no longer that sort of like guise of like, you know, guilt hanging over me. Right. But, yeah, when it happened, I literally didn't eat for 3 days. I mean, I was so distraught over this. I'm like, man, look what they did to me. Like, they're writing me these tickets. Like, this has never happened to me. So, yeah, I mean, it was a big deal at the time. I'm glad it's now, you know, way in the past. But that's the story.
Good gravy. Well, Alan, look, if people want to learn about how you fish and everything, why don't you talk about your website, social media, and all that kind of stuff again? I know you're launching new stuff every day, and that's the least I can do for you for getting on here and wasting your morning and yapping with me about this stupidity. So where can people find your books and learn from your knowledge?
Yeah, thanks, Tony, for the chance to do that. You can take a look on my social media stuff. So Chesapeake Trilogy on Instagram or on Facebook, Blank Tackle Kayak Fishing the Chesapeake. You can get my books on Amazon. But if you search my name, Alan Batista, you'll find it. I've got a 3-book series. They all build on each other. So the first book is Trolling, the second book is Jigging, and the third book is Patterns. And you know, the way that the books are laid out, the Trolling book is really about how to break down any body of water and make it your home body of water. So I call it home field advantage. You know, trolling is just a method to kind of figure out where the hot spots are. You know, it's a point of discovery, and there's a lot of techniques how to do that and how to do it on a kayak. And, you know, really how to turn your fishing trips into basically reliable fishing trips where you can be successful in most trips. And then the second book builds on that, which is about jigging. And it's, you know, the sort of the tagline there is presentation is king. And it's all about, under all these different scenarios. And again, I'm an engineer, so I break it down as far as plastic goes, head weight, you know, volume, and I've done all kinds of different tests, and I've broken it down to get that right presentation, because I think above all else, the presentation matters more than anything else. Doesn't forget color, forget, it's all about how you present the lure to the fish and how they want it. And that's what's going to draw the strike. And then the final book, which was that was a bear to write, because it's a patterns book. That one took me 7 years to write. And, you know, to write a book about patterns, you have to live those patterns and you have to repeat those patterns and you have to try different areas and you have to be able to replicate them to actually call it a pattern. So, you know, I break down, you know, month by month, what the striper's doing, why they're doing it, what the best approach is. And I give you all my personal notes. So that has been the most popular book, because it basically tells you, you know, what to do when. And I think that's been the biggest impediment to most anglers. They don't know. You know, they're doing the wrong thing at the wrong time, or they're doing the right thing at the wrong time.
It's like putting a jigsaw puzzle together.
Right. So
I put them last week. They'll be here again today. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not understanding the wind, the tide, the moon phase.
Exactly. Right. And you can break that down into really micro patterns and see from that. And then the last thing is I just recently opened up www.chesapeaketrilogy.com, and I'm trying to do some stuff there as far as, you know, apparel and merchandise goes. I've got some stuff in there that, you know, if you buy it, 100% of those profits go to conservation, and I'll donate all of that money there. And what else? Yeah, I've got some t-shirts that, you know, the 1% mortality, I think I like, and it's basically an education tool. It's worth checking out, right?
It's worth checking out.
I'm doing my best.
You gotta leave a little bit to the imagination, so they'll use the Google and find you. Well, you know, Alan, look, man, I know I didn't do the hard sell on Alan to get him on here. We've known each other for a long time. I appreciate him coming on here and reliving this because he did catch a lot of hate. You're a poacher. You're this. You're just typical social media stupidity. And he put up with it all. So getting on here kind of is making him relive it. And I appreciate him going through that because I think it's really important that y'all hear this story, because it ain't just cut and dry. It's not simple. It's not like, oh, this guy's targeting, he got a ticket, bad person. Like, no. This is why this option was 27 out of 27 on enforceability, as voted on by the law enforcement committee. And since Alan lived through this, I think it can give people a lot of perspective exactly what could happen to any fisherman with this stupidity on the table that was concocted and conjured up by people who just wanted to kill more stuff and were looking for a scapegoat. And this is the end result of it. So thanks a lot. You know who you are. And that's it, man. We hope y'all enjoyed listening to this cautionary tale of basically a nerdy Boy Scout who just wanted to catch a fish and ended up
easy there.
Dude, come on, man. I mean, let's be honest. Like, you're not exactly like, you know, hey, Alan got busted for an underground gambling ring. Like, I don't think that's going to happen, Alan.
You mean this rugged outdoorsman? You know, that's, yeah, I think that was
a rugged nerdy engineer outdoorsman who has every known thing hooked to his kayaks and his solo skiffs and everything else, and is like, you know, writes books about how a certain jig head acts in certain salinity water. Yeah, if it can happen to Alan, it can happen to anyone. I mean, that's the story here. Like, it's kind of crazy. So can't thank y'all enough for listening. Lots of more good stuff on the table. Alan, thank you for taking the time to be on here, and we'll catch y'all all again on the next show.